Last time I was here, I felt that you were okay with me bringing more bad Unitarian Universalist jokes. Was I correct in that? Because I'm going to give you some, maybe one or two. A child came home from a Unitarian Universalist church school class and reported that in class they had heard about people who eat people, and they're called cannibals. Very upset, the child wanted parental opinion on the idea. Well, one of the UU parents responded, some people think that's terrible. Others think it's all right. When you grow up, you can make up your own mind. Wow. Do people really say that? A Unitarian Universalist mother took her child to see the movie Quo Vadis. The child became very upset at a scene of Christians being eaten by lions. What's the matter? The mother asked. The UU child cried out, that poor lion over there doesn't have any Christians. Was that not good? I'm sorry. I'm a UU Christian, so I can tell that. It's a tough crowd. Next time I'll come to your service. Letting go is one of the most difficult things, at least from my experience, to do in life. And some people would argue that life is a series of holding on and letting go. Potty training, you know, sometimes as a kid you get rewarded for holding on and letting go, and sometimes you get reprimanded for not holding on and letting go. So, I mean, it could be confusing. I like to think of it as when one, you know, you're on a trapeze, which I have never been on and will never go on. But, you know, you let go of one trapeze and you're waiting for the other one to come. And so you're in that in-between phase and you're waiting for the trapeze to come. And it's because it's change. Letting go means change. It also means letting go, well, facing the unknowns of that change. It means giving up control and trusting life. And so in the Lord's Prayer, where we hear, not my will but thine be done, it is a sort of surrender that says, you know, I no longer know what is right for me in this situation. I need to turn this over. Are we willing to risk what we have now for the sake of something better? This is just one of the questions. Do we deserve better? Is what I have not really that bad, or does the grass look greener on the other side? Perhaps I should just water my own grass. Am I still growing in this relationship or job or this situation, or am I just settling? Or if I just hang in long enough, it'll change. These are difficult questions and decisions to make, and no doubt they are life-changing questions. And so I don't feel that I'm going too far out on a limb today if I would suggest that everyone in this room, in some way, shape, or form, has overstayed a welcome. Be it a relationship, Judy, please don't laugh, or job, or when we are stuck and we just won't move. And then life in its infinite wisdom brings a situation or a person along that forces us, compels us to move on and to grow. And we have the choice. We can go kicking and screaming, or we can just go along with the flow, despite the fear of the unknown. And the point of the matter is that no matter where you go, you can move to Bora Bora. I don't know if it's this way, but you get my drift. That wherever you go, there you are. And that same life lesson, that same challenge will follow you wherever you go until you get the lesson. I've heard one therapist describe life as moving from one set of problems to a better set of problems. And I prefer to think of it as things as challenges or lessons, but whatever one calls them, they are very real, and we all encounter them. It can be difficult to accept that certain conditions in life are like a pair of shoes. Eventually, they just stop fitting. Holding on to a job or relationship when it is long passed over will not help you to get on with your life. And don't be surprised if it takes a while to let go. When something in our lives, not all the time, it's been my experience, that when something in life is not working, we often try to fix it. And then if that doesn't work, we pretend it's fixed, at least for a while, telling ourselves that it's fixed, even though we know that it isn't. This is called denial. And it's sincere denial when you really believe it's fixed. But that's magical thinking, isn't it? Finally, you realize that your heart just isn't in the job or the relationship anymore, and that's when you're ready to let it go. The truth of the matter is that we've behaved ourselves into certain situations, and we have to behave ourselves out of them, right? I mean, you fake it until you make it. In fact, sometimes it seems that you're being left behind by the very people you were trying to help in the first place. And so life is really about examination and elimination and recreation. Letting go is an act of courage, for there's always some degree of pain when you release something that once brought you joy and happiness. You have to be patient and mourn the loss, and usually, if life is kind, you see things differently. Opportunities, though, that you never dreamed of will come into your life. As the old dies, the new is born, and the phoenix rises from the ashes. But there's no escaping the pain. In the enriched soil, the seeds of tomorrow can be sown. And the Buddha knew this. I mean, he knew this. He was talking about this 500 years before Jesus, that all we are and all that we will ever be is a result of what? Of our thinking. This is the whole New Thought movement. By forming attachments, you know, he knew that thoughts were energy and thoughts were things, and that by forming attachments to people, places, and things, we cause suffering in our lives and the lives of others. Now, he's not saying that desire is wrong. The human ego believes not only in separation, but it believes in scarcity. And so it's not that the ego is necessarily bad, it's just unconscious. When we observe the ego at work in ourselves, that's when we evolve. That's when we go. We go beyond our egos. And this is the beginning of wisdom. The ego wants to own and identify with form. These forms can be possessions, they can be bodies, etc. In other words, the ego wants to own and possess. And when the ego tells us that there's not enough yet, really all it's saying is that I'm not enough yet. It's insatiable. You see, it's not about wanting or desiring something or someone. It's just that in a world that is constantly in flux, in a world of change, to become overly attached to anything will cause suffering. If we look deeply enough, we will see that every apparent loss brings us an unexpected gain. Spiritual teacher Eckhart Tolle tells a marvelous story, which I'm going to share with you, and he calls it the Lost Ring. As a counselor, he tells of working with a woman twice a week whose body was riddled with cancer. She was dying. And this woman was young. She was in her mid-40s and was given only a few months to live by her physicians. He says that only a few words were exchanged on his initial visits, but mostly they just maybe held hands or just sat in silence. And this silence was healing because it caused the woman to experience the stillness within herself that she never knew existed during her busy life as a school teacher. Like most of us at one time or another, she was a human doing as opposed to a human being. And one day he arrived to find the woman in a great deal of distress and anger. And what happened? He asked her, what is going on? Her diamond ring, of great sentimental value as well as being quite expensive, had disappeared. To make matters worse, she was certain that it had been stolen by the woman who came to care for her each day. The woman said she just couldn't believe how anyone could be so callous, how so cold-hearted. It was such a heartless thing to do, to take this ring. And so the woman had asked Eckhart if he thought she should just confront the woman or just call the police. I'm going to call the police. Now, because this man had good boundaries and he's somewhat evolved, he responded that, "I can't tell you what to do. I'm not comfortable with that." But he did ask her to find out how important a ring or anything else was to her at this point in her life. And so she said, you know, she went off. She said, "You don't understand. You're just not getting this. You don't understand. This was my grandmother's ring. I used to wear it every day until my hands got too swollen, and it's more than just a ring to me. How can I not be upset? Why aren't you getting this?" And he was cool. He just said that the quickness of her response and the anger and defensiveness were clues to him that she had not yet been present enough just to distance herself a bit from the event and to observe herself and her feelings. The ego was at work through her anger and defensiveness. Eckhart said that he was going to ask her a few questions, but instead of answering them now, he said to her, "I want you to see if you can find the answers within you. The answers, however, may not always come in the form of words." And she said, "Fine, I'm ready to listen." His first question was, "Do you realize that you will have to let go of this ring at some point, and perhaps quite soon?" The second question was, "How much time do you need before you're going to be ready to let this go? Will you become less when you let go of it? Has who you are become diminished by the loss?" He notes that there was a few minutes of silence after the last question, and a little smile kind of crept over her face. And he says that when she started speaking again, she was just more peaceful. She said, "The last question made me realize something vital, something important." She said, "First I went to my mind for the answer, and my mind said, of course I'd be diminished. What, are you kidding me?" But she said, "Then I asked myself the question again. And, you know, has who I am become diminished? And this time I tried to feel rather than to think of the answer. Suddenly," she said, "I could feel my I am-ness. And I've never felt that before. I can feel the I am-ness so strongly that who I am hasn't been diminished at all. I can still feel it now, something very peaceful and something very alive." And you know, we fight like banshees when people put us in boxes, right? But look at the boxes we put. "I'm a Unitarian. I'm a Universalist. I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter. I'm a Tea Partier. I'm a Republican. I'm straight. I'm gay. I'm black. I'm white. This, that, this." And this woman was in touch. See, you don't want to wait until you're going through that tunnel, man, to this light before you get it as you go on to the next part of your journey. You need to get that right now. And this is what he afforded her to do. Those labels and boxes we place ourselves in, we are so much more. It's not that we can't be Unitarian Universalists. It's not that we can't be whatever it is we want to be, but that we are just so much more than that. This woman was being given a gift. And so when we look, when Moses goes to Yahweh, and Yahweh says, "You know, I need you to run these errands and whatever," and he goes, "Well, wait a minute. Who am I? Who are you? Who are you that you're telling me to do this? Who should I tell Pharaoh is sending me?" And he says, "Aya Asher Aya. I will be that I will be. I will be who I will be. I will be where I will be. I am who I am." That's who you tell this brother is sending you. These are all Hebrew translations of that sentence. I'm not making this up. This one. You get a Hebrew Bible, you get the truth. Yeah. My seminary training does come in handy once in a while. But as the poet reminds us, as human beings, what is our mission? Well, it is to be who we really are. So we have to unlearn what we've learned. Sometimes that's more difficult than learning something new. And so the poet says, I am me, for that I came. I came here to be me. And so Eckhart answered her by saying that this I amness is the very joy of being. But you only feel it when you get out of your head. Let me say it again. You only feel it when you get out of your head, right? The longest distance we'll ever travel is from here to here. But being must be felt. It can't be thought. The ego can't know about it because thought is what the ego consists of. The ring was really in your head as a thought that she confused with being the sense of I am. You thought that the I am was part of the ring. He went on to say that whatever the ego seeks and gets attached to are substitutes for the being that we cannot feel. You can value and care for things and people, but whenever you get attached to them, you know it's the ego, and you're never really attached to a thing, but to a thought. Because that thought has I, me, or mine attached to it. Whenever you completely accept a loss, you have gone beyond the ego and who you are, and the I am, which is consciousness itself, emerges. This is the part of us that can never be destroyed. This is the part of us when people have NDEs, and I've met a few, and they all come back and say the same thing. And there's a shift. I'm not afraid of death. I may not want it to hurt, but I know I live on. My consciousness goes on beyond this personality, beyond this hair, beyond the earrings, beyond the suit. That's the part of you that never changes. Sometimes you have to say that through tears. In the last few weeks of her life, he says that her body became weaker, but she became more radiant, as if an inner light had come from her. She gave away her possessions, some to the woman she thought had robbed her. Little miracles every day. Eckhart says that when her mother phoned him to tell her that she had made her transition, she also mentioned that after her death, they found the ring in the medicine cabinet in the bathroom. How to get there, we'll never know that. Yet one thing we do know, life will give you whatever experience is most helpful for the evolution of your consciousness. And how do you know that this is the experience you need? Because it's the experience you're having at the moment. Don't take the ego too seriously. I know I don't anymore. Mine's as big as this room at times. Sometimes it's the lack of ego, which is the low self-esteem, flip sides of the same coin. But at times, you may even smile or laugh at yourself. The ego isn't personal. It's not even who you really are. Life has its own rhythm. If you let go, you will find it. And letting go is not easy, but that doesn't mean you give up on life. It only means that each moment is new. It took me a long time to learn that. I'm still learning. To do this, one cannot be attached to what just happened. You can appreciate it, you can savor it, you can grieve it, which you must do, but you must let it go where it will. You cannot control life. Control is resistance, and resistance is futile. If you are resisting, just observe the way you're resisting. Just don't lose yourself in the drama, and then you can see which doors are open and which doors are closed. And whatever you do, please don't try to walk through a closed door. Have you ever noticed that no matter how evolved an individual is or thinks they are or how spiritual they are, they always leave a room through the door. They never try to walk through the wall. If you attempt to walk through closed doors, you will hurt yourself, literally and figuratively. So even if you don't know why the door is closed, at least respect the fact that it is, because wanting it to open does not make it open. Remember, the goal is to move from dis-ease to ease, from discomfort to comfort. And perhaps next time, if you're fortunate enough to get a next time, we'll make smarter choices. If you want to open a door, open this. Open this door. Open the door to your heart. Is it open or closed? Because if it is open, all the stuff of the universe comes to you. What's the old biblical saying? That the Lord opened up the windows of heaven and poured out a blessing to me that I couldn't even hold enough of it. If it is closed, you stand alone holding off the world. Trust and the river flows through your heart. Distrust and a dam comes. A dam will hold the river back. And the river is the river of love. A heart in resistance gets tired quickly because life will weigh heavily upon it. But a heart that is open is filled with energy and it dances and sings. When the door in your heart is open, all of the world's doors will open for you. I've seen it. I'm trying to live in that place where I don't get afraid that there's not enough love to go around. It's not enough money to go around. It's not enough codependence to go around. Everything that you are unfolds naturally in its own time, without struggle and without restraint. So the unexpected miracles, as Marianne Williamson says, miracles will happen every day. Just let go of your end of the rope. You'll be fine. I promise you, you'll be fine. So, here, to your personal strength, and your peace of mind, through the understanding and elimination of all things that hindered or denied our collective power, our greatness, and our ability to have the courage to simply let go. Julian of Norwich tells us that all shall be well. All shall be well, and all manner of things will be well. And Rumi reminds us, and reminds me, the time of words is ended. No more words, only the voice within. May it always be so. Amen. And blessed be.